This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation. Trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you, committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Let's get the opening bell going, 6:09 on this Thursday morning, September 4th. No winner in a Powerball, going to go up to, what, $3 trillion, I think, right? By Saturday night, $15 trillion, something, the national debt. You can retire the national debt if you win a Powerball?
Pretty much, and with people buying Powerball tickets, wouldn't be surprised if it got above the $2 billion mark. Right now, the jackpot estimated at $1.7 billion.
And there are some other winners, so you might want to check your tickets, just see if you won $50 or $100 or whatever. As it stands now, I'll have to win on Saturday night the big Powerball just to break even with all the tickets I've been buying for the last 47 drawings. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk to Dane Cianlino. Y'all text me at 504-260-1870 safely. Don't ever text and drive. How do you feel about the idea of President Trump sending the guard and Governor Landry welcoming the guard into New Orleans? And do you really think we got like a serious crime problem here that the National Guard has to come in and take care of? Or is it all just a political stunt? 504-260-1870. I'm leaning towards stunt, but I'm cynical, so there you go. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Dane Cianlino about the legalities of it all here on WWL. Man, it's nice outside this morning. I drove in with the sunroof open, or moonroof, I guess, at night, and the windows open, and it's going to be nice today, although warming up a lot. Right now, it's 73 degrees and very nice outside, going up to 90 tomorrow as well, dry all the way through next Friday. Highs only in the mid-80s on Tuesday. By that point, we'll be approaching, what, almost mid-September and hurricane season. Statistical peak is the 10th. About a week from now, so maybe, cross fingers, everything looks quiet. Let's hope everything's all right. Dane Cianlino joins us now, professor of law at Loyola. Talk about President Trump, National Guard, posse comitatus, the courts, etc. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Just fine, Tommy. How are you?
I'm okay. The president takes an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. It seems as though he's kind of walking, putting his toes out there to see how far he can go. Accurate or not?
In many respects, yes. And yes, with regard to the deployment of or the federalization of National Guard troops in California, where 2 days ago a federal judge said he exceeded his authority in doing that. And of course, he's talked about doing it in Chicago and most recently in New Orleans.
So let's talk. What does that mean? Federalization of troops. Let's talk National Guard people that are in Louisiana, National Guard people from other places. How do they interface with local police? Because nothing just happens, right? You got to have the legal authority to do stuff. Explain what's going on in California and what the court said and what happens from here, and then we'll bring it down to Louisiana.
Yeah, the National Guard typically is controlled by the governor of the state in which the National Guard units are located. But under federal law, the president can essentially federalize them, bring them into the federal military under his control if and only if certain prerequisites exist. And in California, that's exactly what the president did. He essentially argued that he was federalizing the troops because the local law enforcement officials and law enforcement bodies weren't able to enforce the law. And when civilian authorities essentially fail, the president can federalize troops and use them for tasks that would typically be ordinary law enforcement. Now, of course, the president can always federalize troops for things like insurrections, rebellions, to repel invasions, but he didn't do it for those reasons. Obviously, he did it because he contended, and the federal district judge in California disagreed. He contended that local authorities couldn't enforce civilian law.
So that was a California state judge, correct or not?
It was a federal judge.
Federal judge.
Yeah, that ruling was 2 days ago. It's on hold now, pending the government's appeal. But that was obviously a setback for President Trump.
So at what point would he get to the Supreme Court? And I guess where I'm headed here, Dane, is if the Supreme Court were to rule in favor of President Trump, would that in effect do away with posse comitatus or not?
Well, it depends on exactly how that case came out. But posse comitatus is that you've used that term several times, and that's a federal statute from the 1870s that says that federal troops can't be used for ordinary law enforcement unless Congress provides some express exception. Mm-hmm. And if the Supreme Court were to look at this case, it would probably look at the facts. I mean, there's nothing unconstitutional about any of the statutes that Congress has passed. Mm-hmm. And the only question is whether they apply given the factual circumstances in California. And the federal judge said, found as a factual matter, that no, there is no insurrection, rebellion, invasion, and no evidence that local law enforcement can't adequately enforce civilian laws.
So what happens when a governor says, yeah, come on in, as opposed to a governor that is fighting it, like in California or Illinois, not in a court yet in Illinois because it hasn't happened, but, you know, the words are going back and forth, and Maryland as well?
Yeah, I think that'd be a very different situation. And, of course, Governor Landry would presumably welcome President Trump doing this in Louisiana, at least in New Orleans. And if the governor's involved and the governor's essentially deploying the National Guard, there's nothing at all wrong with that. I mean, we've certainly seen that in Louisiana. Governor Blanco did deploy the National Guard during Katrina. I think more recently there was some deployment of the National Guard for the Super Bowl. So if Governor Landry were on board and participating in the deployment of the National Guard, that would be an entirely different situation.
As it relates to, let me just read the texts that are coming in. People are freaking out. They think that President Trump is trying to nationalize his police forces in different areas, and that when it comes to insurrection, he's going to refuse to leave office, and that he's going to define that as an insurrection. And what he's doing is, and I'm just combining like 100 texts here, what he's doing is like a frog in the boiling water, which I don't know if that's true or not. If you gradually increase the water, a frog will boil. I don't know, but that's what they say. So that's in essence what's happening, that he's taking over cities one at a time, although it's only been California so far, I guess, right, in Washington, D.C., and that he's going to put the National Guard in place so that when he decides not to leave office, that then the National Guard will be there to put down any, quote, insurrection against him. Thoughts?
Geez, that's a lot of information there.
Well, you know what? Let's take a break for traffic. You can address it when we come back. The only reason I bring it up is because I've been text on it, so we may as well address it if people are feeling it. 620, Dane Cialino, our guest. He'll sort through all of those numerous texts that I combined into one amalgam when we come back. Right now, time for traffic on WWL. 624, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Dane Cialino, professor of law at Loyola. I combined a bunch of texts into one big question before we went to the break, which is basically, people are concerned, some people are concerned, that President Trump's taken over the different police forces in different municipalities, not going to step down, and then they'll be there to quell whatever, quote, insurrection happens against him. And I guess the legal question there, Dane, would be for people that are, for whatever reason, concerned about that, what right, legal rights would they have at that point to appeal whatever is going on?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that President Trump is pushing the constitutional envelope in many, many respects, and in some cases he's clearly within his authority. Some cases it's a close call, and some cases he's clearly wrong. But whenever that happens, obviously anyone who's aggrieved by it withstanding can go to federal court and get an injunction against what he's doing, and that's been happening all over the country in response to his executive orders.
What about the mayor and the governor as it relates to New Orleans and National Guard troops? Who trumps whom? Pardon the pun.
Yeah, I mean, the Governor Landry controls the Louisiana National Guard, not the mayor. You know, the governor and the state government have police power over New Orleans, subject, of course, to New Orleans Home Rule Charter. But, you know, it's hard to say if the mayor put up a big fight against the deployment of the National Guard by the governor, how that would come out. I would expect that the governor would probably win that shoving match. Mm-hmm. But the mayor has been, since the Landry administration has come in, the mayor has been, in the view of some people, kind of remarkably cooperative with the governor's efforts to improve law enforcement, particularly in the French Quarter with the state police and to a lesser extent with the National Guard.
So when it comes to the ruling of where does this go next in California? Trump appealed and it goes to where now? What court?
Yeah, it's going to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco, which will consider whether the district court erred over the course of the next couple of months, and then eventually it'll get to the United States Supreme Court, like so many of these lower court decisions are headed.
So if it does go to the Supreme Court and they rule in favor of the White House, is that going to be like any kind of earth-shattering news or anything, or not really?
Well, I don't think so, because it's all just a matter of applying existing constitutional and statutory law to the facts of the case. So it's just a simple application of a lot of facts. And here the factual question is whether or not the local law enforcement officials are able to adequately enforce laws using the civilian policing authorities. And there's already been a finding that they are. I think that will be more difficult for the administration to deal with, although courts are typically very deferential to the administration's, to the president's findings of facts on matters of national security.
So when it comes to precedent, not president, and I guess stare decisis, what kind of, going forward, what kind of precedent would that set for other states who would object, or would each case be heard on its own, or would they automatically revert to whatever this case is called?
Yeah, it certainly would be precedent, and it could lower the bar as to what is an acceptable level of inability to enforce laws with civilian authorities. You know, what the bar would be to deploying federalizing troops and bringing you know, the Army, the Marines, and federalized National Guard troops to support civilian law enforcement efforts. I mean, that would be a very important decision if the Supreme Court allows it.
So the other way around, what happens if they say, no, he's wrong?
Well, again, and I think we're going to see more and more of that from the United States Supreme Court. There have been a number of emergency docket orders allowing him to proceed. But we haven't gotten a lot of opinions on the merits on what he does. What he's been doing, those take a long time. So I do think this term, when it starts the first Monday in October, is going to be loaded with Trump-type cases, and the ability, then the Supreme Court will have an ability to consider what limits there are on his Article II power.
Are we going to get a ruling in June, or do they expedite it and we find something out more soon than that?
Yeah, no telling. I think it's going to take a much longer time on this deployment of troops issue because this is just the district court opinion is only 2 days old. So mm-hmm. I don't expect we'll get anything from the U.S. Supreme Court on this for quite a while.
So until then, the situation in California is Trump has been restrained from this?
He has, and that's going to go to the Ninth Circuit. That's a court that's very likely to affirm the district court, and that'll tee it up for Supreme Court review sometime, probably in the late this year or early next year.
And in the interim, if he decides to ignore what the Ninth Circuit says, what happens?
Well, he hasn't done that. He hasn't blatantly defied orders of the federal courts of appeal yet. That would provoke probably a fairly quick emergency review by the Supreme Court on what they call its shadow docket, and they would probably issue an injunction on that, but who knows?
All right. Thank you, Dane. Appreciate it. Dane Cianlino, professor of law at Loyola. We'll talk to Mike Strain. We come back, Louisiana Agricultural Commissioner. We always learn something when we talk to him. Right now, we pause for WWL First News. All right, 6:45, quarter till 7, Friday, Thursday morning. That means time to talk to Friday. We would have missed him. Thursday morning, time to talk to Mike Strain. Dr. Mike Strain, a loved veterinarian on the North Shore Commission, Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry. How you doing, Mike Strain?
And I am great. Look, it's football season. Uh-huh. Time for gumbo, time uh-huh. for hot dogs.
Uh-huh.
You know what? And the weather is nice. And, of course, you know, yesterday I was in the city with Chef Erica Michelle Lassier, who's also known as Chef Diva, mm-hmm. and Diva Dogs. And so I was at her home, and she was cooking up her special hot dogs for me. And have you had a Diva Dog?
I have not, Mike.
Well, you know, so the first one, she says, okay, so sit down and get ready. And, she, you know, she's just full of, you know, just a tremendous fun personality. Mm-hmm. And she, you know, she studied at Delgado mm-hmm. Culinary Arts School. And it's a sausage dog, but it's topped with crawfish etouffee. Mm. Her own recipe for her etouffee sauce. That was incredible. She says, now get ready for the next one. And her next dog is her own red bean. She uses her own spices, and she is certified Louisiana. It's all Louisiana product. And then she adds onto that some, like, these crispy chicken nuggets and her own special ketchup sauce that she makes. And so she sells spices, and she has a food truck. And even more fun, she says, I'm ready now to travel the world with you through SUSTA, the Southern United States Trade Association, which is located, headquartered in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I want to bring New Orleans and Diva Dogs to the world. So it's exciting. It was a lot of fun. But it just shows that what an entrepreneur with spirit and drive can do. And she makes a living selling these beautiful, magnificent dogs out of her food truck and other catering events, and now she's working to get into local restaurants.
Mike,
so it was a fun day.
Yeah, I bet it was. I got to ask you, I got a hard enough time keeping the relish on my hot dog. How do you keep all that on there with the bun?
It's sort of like one of those six napkin po' boys you get there in New Orleans.
Open face kind of thing, yeah.
Right? Yeah. It may not be pretty, but my goodness, it's good, right?
There you go. That's all that counts.
That's
It's National Honey Month. I want you to talk about the importance of bees and how we send bees to other states and so forth, because I don't think, oh, by the way, my lady, the lady next to me, my neighbor is a beekeeper, and we were talking the other day, and a wasp came by, and I went to swat it with a tennis racket. I thought, man, it was like Secret Service with the police, the way she was going to knock that out of my hand.
Yeah,
I'm not kidding you. Secret Service with the president. She was like, no. Go ahead.
No swatting. Yes. And I tell everybody on my farm, don't be swatting because, one, you may get them upset, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially if there are bees there, you may get them upset. Extremely important. I can tell you the most expensive bees I ever sold, I not sold, saw sold in the state, came from the USDA has a bee research center in Baton Rouge. Mm-hmm. It is internationally known. They sold two bees to Japan, two bees, two queens at $6,000 each.
Yeah, be kidding.
You talk about two bees, right? $6,000 each. I say, oh man, that's hope for my bee breeding program as well. But they are extraordinarily important. A number of crops. If you look at crops, for instance, the almond crop. You look at other crops up in the Midwest, and they simply would not exist. They must have bees to pollinate. Bees are old world. They come from Europe. A lot of European crops that we have here planted wherever require bees. I know on my farm, I can tell you, when I go out in my garden and they're out there just working their hearts out, you know, in my vegetable gardens and, of course, with our fruit trees and everything, they are critical, one, for food production, but number two, they are a tremendous indicator of what's going on in the environment. And I watch my bees very, very closely. But, so mankind now, you know, we must have the bees to exist. You know, it's fun, but they produce, and the honey they produce, of course, I say that is like, that's Lanyap, right? The honey is Lanyap, but bees are critical, and I tell you, we're working very hard. There's some exciting things coming on in the world of bees. They've just, you know, concluded some research, and it was done in England, very close to where I was visiting a couple of weeks ago, where they're looking at, you know, why some of the colonies have failed, and what they found is that there's specific things in the diet that may be lacking that result in the bee death, the colony collapse disorder, and they are sterols, like cholesterol is one of them, and they're developing these feeds with these very specific products, and they found that a sevenfold increase in the number of bees that they fed the proper diet versus the ones that were on a monodiet. That's one of the issues we have is what we call monodiets. In other words, we don't have the diversity that they need, and they need a diverse diet, just like me and you. And so we're working on that, and I think there's going to be some exciting things there. And they've also figured out a way to vaccinate queens for certain diseases that we have battled in colony collapse disorder. So we're making a lot of progress. Last year, especially December, January, February was really tough on bees. There was a tremendous colony loss, and there was a lot of trying to figure out what the world was going on, and it was weather-related and nutrition-related, and so we're working to overcome that. But I tell you, bee biology is exciting, and of course, we just had the Bee Association meeting there in Pineville about 2 weeks ago, and just a lot of fun, a lot of good stuff, and of course, you know, bees and people, we coexist. So don't swap the bees. They know that. They sense that.
Well, this is a wasp now, just to be clear. This is a wasp.
Oh, it was a wasp. I understand. Yeah. I understand. You don't want to get the old queen bee to tell the others to look. You know, Tommy's out there swatting at us, right?
No, we don't want that, I guess.
Yeah, they got long memories. They're like little elephants. They don't forget.
So does my neighbor. She fussed at me, I'll tell you that. So when it comes to the sugar cane, tell me what's going on with that and what people need to be aware of.
Well, with sugar cane, right now, you know, we're going in to harvest very soon. We will fire the plant this month. And so, you know, each and every day, the farmer has to deliver their allotment of cane to the mill. That's the way it works. Once we fire the mills, we fire them generally on natural gas, but then they run on sugar cane. They run on bagasse. And so those trucks are delivering every day. And so give them a little extra space. You know, those trucks weigh in at about 100,000 pounds. And so don't try to outrun a truck. Don't try to outrun the cane trailers. And really be careful. Just plan your day to know that there are agricultural trucks of all types, between sugarcane and corn and rice and cotton on the road. And then if you see a big piece of machinery moving, you know, because they have to move very large machines. Those cane harvesters are large. The cotton pickers are massive. And you see them pulling over to the right a little bit, just make absolutely sure. Look to see if they got their blinkers on. Because if they're turning left, they have to swing to the right to turn the left. That doesn't mean they're swinging to the right to let you go around them. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes they will. But just be very, you know, exercise caution. And whatever you do, don't try to outrun the railroads, right? Because every year there's issues. People, they're in a hurry. They try to get ahead of the farm equipment and jump across that railroad track. The train might be coming.
Mike, let me ask you about grocery prices and some maybe hope for people to look ahead to the future.
Well, I think what you need to do is start thinking about planting your own gardens. As discussion that vegetable prices may be going up substantially over the next 6 months. Grocery prices are going up, but mainly in vegetables and in beef. Other grocery prices are coming down, which is a good thing. But I think everyone thinks, you know, plant a small garden. Think about going to your farmer's markets and all that sort of thing. And, you know, and again, more cooking from scratch. You know, if you're buying more of your different spices and cooking from scratch, you can stretch your food budget. So again, cooking from scratch, visiting those farmers markets, and wherever you can, grow your own.
And don't be afraid of eating leftovers. They can't hurt you unless they're too old.
Oh, they get better. But when's the gumbo the best? Right?
After everybody it's gets to meet each other, and after everybody gets to meet each other in the pot, right, and hang out and get
that's
to know each
exactly
other.
Exactly right. Yes, I love second day. And sometimes, look, I got big iron pots that I inherited from my great grandmother. Right, I got the gumbo pot.
There
my brother
go.
Still looks at it every day when he's over here. But wow. I got the gumbo pot, and look, I'll eat third day gumbo.
Amen. Thank you, Mike Strain. Appreciate it as always. Commissioner Louisiana Department of Agriculture and Forestry, 6:54, 6 till 7. Traffic now. WWL. In a world. Have you ever seen a movie about a movie announcer? 7:14, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by Amanda Moore, Senior Director of the National Wildlife Federation's Golf Program, to talk about the state and the Army Corps of Engineers and restoring the west wetlands hurt by Mr. Go as we come off the 20th anniversary of Katrina. Good morning. How are you, Amanda?
Good morning. I'm good. Thank you.
Tell me about the damage. Well, first of all, it was a long time ago. Maybe people don't remember. Tell me what right. Mr. Go is or was.
So Mississippi River Gulf Outlet, which people know as Mr. Go, was a 76-mile-long deep draft federal navigation channel that was built in the late 50s and early 60s as a shortcut between the Gulf of Mexico and the Port of New Orleans. So it was supposed to bring in a lot more ship traffic and be this economic engine of the region. It ended up being, costing taxpayers $20,000 per ship to maintain by 2006 because it was little used.
It was shot. Yeah, I wanted to say that. I wanted to make that point. It was seldom used, correct?
Right, right.
So not only did it do a lot of damage, do a lot of damage, but it didn't even work for what it was designed to do.
Economic drain and environmental disaster.
There you go. Okay. So what happened then? And I did interviews with people before Katrina, with people from St. Bernard Parish, that told me what was going to happen if a scenario like Katrina would happen. And it did. And it did with Mr. Go. So tell me what happened during Katrina and what kind of damage resulted as a result of the years of this thing being open.
Absolutely. So people called it the Hurricane Highway before mm-hmm. Hurricane Katrina. They knew what was going to happen. And unfortunately, the worst that anybody could imagine, I think, or probably couldn't even have imagined, happened during Hurricane Katrina when two different things happened with the Mr. Go during Hurricane Katrina. One, the channel, the width of the channel went from the original 650 feet wide to over 3,000 feet wide from erosion in some places. And so the waves during Katrina were able to regenerate in the channel and then go up against the levee system. And so you had multiple breaches along the Mr. Go during Katrina. Then you also had a funnel of water that happened at the confluence of the Mr. Go and the Gulf Intercoastal Waterway, right up, where the Mississippi River connects to the Gulf Intercoastal Waterway. That caused this funnel of water, a huge 20-foot surge of water, and the very infamous levee break in the lower Ninth Ward, where you saw the highest loss of life and the most catastrophic damage. I think there was maybe one structure in St. Bernard Parish that didn't take water during Katrina.
Amanda,
so
thank
it
you.
It was catastrophic.
Thank you for refreshing my memory, because I know at one point I did know that it had gone from 650 feet to 3,000 feet because of scouring, and that should never have happened in the first place, right?
Right. So the Army Corps knew that there was immense erosion. Everybody knew there was immense erosion happening and that this was hugely problematic, as you were saying, but nothing happened. And unfortunately, it took until Katrina for the channel to finally get a closure, just a navigational closure along Bayou Olutra and St. Bernard. What we've learned about the impacts of the Mr. Go post-closure from monitoring of the whole system in the Pontchartrain Basin is that the Mr. Go impacted, not only did it fully destroy tens of thousands of acres because of the construction of it and the operation of it, but it actually impacted over 1 million acres of coastal habitat surrounding New Orleans.
How did that happen? With intrusion of saltwater or what?
Saltwater intrusion was a big part of it. A lot of it was shifting the salinity all the way up to Maurepaw. And then also just the erosion from the channel itself.
When it comes to the I just can't get past the fact that, you know, this is, I don't know how old you are, but this was, I mean, 19.
I'm very young.
Okay, well, this was probably before you were born, is why I'm saying this, where people were telling me that this was going to happen, this was going to happen, this was going to happen. People were screaming to the Corps of Engineers from St. Bernard Parish, this was going to happen, this was going to happen, this is waiting to happen, this is waiting to happen. And it happened and nobody did anything. I'm still astounded by that. Amanda?
So in 2007, Congress did act. Right after the storm, St. Bernard, scientists, nonprofits, immediately, you know, in that aftermath, wrote a paper that said, you got to do something now, federal government. And in 2007, Congress acted. They passed the Water Resources Development Act. And in it, it said that the Corps must close the Mr. Go and come up with a plan to restore the damaged ecosystem. So essentially, it's a mitigation project for federal disaster. And they did. They closed the channel in 2009 with a permeable rock dam at Biolutra. And 2011, I think it was, or 2012, they finished the surge barrier, the Great Wall of Louisiana, mm-hmm. which is a linchpin of the Hydra system now. That's a 2 mile long, over $1 billion to build it. It's quite a sight. So those are the actions taken. The Corps did come up with a plan for restoration. They finished it in 2012. It called for over $3 billion in 2012 dollars of ecosystem restoration. But that was the end of that story for quite a long time because there was a dispute over cost share and who pays for this. Is it a federal expense for construction? Is it the state? Most people held firm that it was a federal expense, but it took until WERDA 2022 for that clarification to come from Congress saying it is indeed a full federal expense.
Let me take a break, and we'll pick it up there when we come back because I want to talk about what's going to be done to repair and how you're going to go about it, all right? You might be young, but you know what you're talking about. Amanda Moore, Senior Director for the National Wildlife Federation's golf program. No, but Jimmy Pullman told me, you know, back in 1990-something, it was like, this is going to happen, and sure enough, it did. 721 traffic now, WWL. 726 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Amanda Moore, Senior Director for the National Wildlife Federation's golf program. We've already talked about Mr. Go and the damage that it caused. How do you go about restoring it, prioritizing, how do you fix it?
So right after Katrina, a lot of folks, you know, were like, well, we should just fill the channel in, right? And that's really not possible. And it actually is not going to fix the damage that was incurred. So just taking that one, I think they costed that out after Katrina around $20 billion. And you got to remember that just not even with all the erosion, just building that channel, they moved more dirt to build that channel than they moved to build the Panama Canal. So it's a massive, massive undertaking. So how do you fix it? So you have to be very strategic to fix very critical landscape features. You have to shore up the bank lines along the Mr. Go, and you have to do a lot of shoreline protection, a lot of marsh restoration, and ridge restoration. Those are the primary features. And the Corps has a plan. The state of Louisiana has been implementing the parts of the Mr. Go that are in the coastal master plan. So there are billions of dollars worth of projects that need to move forward. And even though the state has already moved forward, hundreds of millions of dollars of projects.
So are they funded? And compare and contrast how they're going to do this with the Mid-Barataria sediment diversion. This would not be diversions. This would be dredging. Or what are we talking about, Amanda?
It's a variety. So a lot of it is that marsh creation. A lot of it is shoreline protection.
When you say marsh creation, you're talking about dredging?
Dredging, okay. Yeah, and fill in the marsh. And some of these projects have been ongoing. So you see the Golden Triangle right in front of the surge barrier. Mm-hmm. The state has moved a project on that. It would be more of that. East Orleans Land Bridge, the Central Wetlands, that 30,000-acre impounded area between the Hysdris and the 40 Arpent Levee that runs along Chalmette and the Lower Ninth Ward and Araby, the Biloxi Marsh. Is another key area that needs restoration. And so there's some, like the Lake Bourne Marsh Creation Project, that would be in the footprint of the Mr. Go work that needs to be continued to be done. And so that's the largest marsh creation project that the state has ever done.
So these are funded and underway and will happen, Amanda?
No. After 20 years,
no.
We are still waiting. The federal government has not funded one project so far in their ecosystem restoration plan since Katrina. So we are asking now for the federal government to prioritize this work and to move it ahead with urgency. What they just did right before the Katrina anniversary was sign a design agreement with the state of Louisiana, the Army Corps in the state. And this allows you to go into the design phase on some of the initial features. And they'll be working on some shoreline work around Lake Bourne and on state water bottoms. So that would be the first phase that needs to move forward. Once they get it designed, they need to ask for funding from Congress to go to construction, to actually appropriate the dollars.
Let me alert our stations down the Tommy Tucker Network line, and we're going to be a minute late here. But when it comes to this Mr. Go, you said they moved more than they did with the Panama Canal?
Right.
So this was a colossal mistake, an expensive, extremely expensive, colossal mistake from the beginning. And all we're asking is to just, you know, I hate to ask you to spend more money, but you wasted all of this money already and caused all of this damage. Can we fix it? That's what we're saying here, right? Bottom line?
This is a situation of it was broken. It needs to be fixed.
Well, you broke it. Not it's broken. You broke it, right?
Right.
Yeah, you broke it. Then it was broken. Now you need to fix what you broke. Thank you, Amanda. I appreciate it. 7:31, coming back with Steve Geller talking about the Saints right now. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. 7:47, 13 till 8. Quickly to Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director. Saints kicking off the season Sunday. Football season starting tonight. All the coverage here on WWL. But before that, Steve Geller, good morning. How you doing?
I am fantastic, Tommy. Like you said, the season kicking off tonight. Looking forward to seeing Dallas and Philadelphia meet up on Thursday Night Football.
And before that, you guys are going to get the weekend kicked off at the Treasure Chest, right?
Yes, sir. Every Thursday, me and Mike Dottiglia hanging out at the Treasure Chest Casino, talking all things Saints, LSU, and giving our picks for this weekend as well.
Man, them Tigers look good, didn't they?
Woo-wee, yeah. Mm-hmm. I was highly impressed. I was kind of hesitant at first with this team. Wanted to see what the O-line was going to look like this year. And then, man, oh, man, the defense sure looks like the roar has been restored back over there.
You know what I want to see with LSU? God bless our friends at Louisiana Tech. I don't want anybody to take this wrong. But you know how some of the real powerhouses, if they play a team that's not up to par, they don't take any mercy. They run up like 72 points. And I'm not saying that LSU can do that against Louisiana Tech. I just don't want this to be a close game. I want LSU to just keep building momentum. Do you understand what I'm saying? Without hurting anybody's
feelings.
Pedal
to the metal, and then hopefully we get some of those reserve guys in to get them a little action.
Exactly. Let's talk about, speaking of reserve guys, if you're an NFL player, enjoy today and tomorrow and Saturday, because it's probably the best you're going to feel until next winter, right?
Oh, yeah. We got the season kicking off today in Philadelphia. Tomorrow is the game, an NFL game in Brazil, so we got Thursday, Friday football. And then, like you mentioned, once the action, you know, Sunday, Monday, after week one, all these guys are going to be bruised, battered, and just in that recovery mode the entire year.
Who is bruised and battered for the Saints? Let's talk about injury report.
Yeah, thankfully, it's not too serious for the Saints. Limited yesterday. You had defensive tackle Christian Boyd, who's dealing with a hand issue. Safety Jordan Howden is recovering from an oblique injury. Alante Taylor back in practice. Great to see him. Mm-hmm. He's coming back from a groin issue. We'll talk, I'm sure, a little bit more about him. He's hopeful that he'll be able to play on Sunday. And then one that popped up yesterday during practice, Chase Young injuring his calf. Head coach Kellen Moore said that it's not that serious. We'll have to see if he's back on the field today. He was limited in yesterday's action, and the only person that did not practice for the Black and Gold, left guard Trevor Penning, still dealing with the toe issue. I'm not expecting him to be ready for Sunday, Tommy.
Is that a turf toe? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, Penning is dealing with the turf toe issue right now.
But he's on the pup or not?
No. He just recently got out of the boot. So he is, you know, getting closer with his recovery. But to think he's going to be able to get on the field, practice and be ready for Sunday, I'm not betting on it.
As I understand the nature of turf toe injuries, it's the kind of thing almost like a hamstring where if you go too soon, you're going to put yourself right back where you started and waste all of what you've done already, right?
Yeah, and that's the fact that a big offensive lineman relying on his feet and, you know, balance.
Pushing off, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a good scenario. And I think we've talked about it a ton, the fact that just calling it turf toe doesn't do the injury justice.
No, it doesn't. Let's talk about Chase Young. That got my attention because this guy can reach up to the sky. And yeah. Kyler Murray is not that tall, so we need him to play.
No, and the fact that he is, I would say, your top pass rusher on this Saints squad. He had was sixth in the NFL in pressures a year ago. We're hoping that can translate more into sacks this year. But definitely seemed like a different guy going into this year, not just from his makeup physically, because he's been a specimen just to look at, but mentally definitely a lot more comfortable with his team, his surroundings, a lot more being vocal on the field as well. And I thought that attitude, you know, would translate into this year into some big numbers for him. The Cajun Cannon, Bobby Aberg's expecting double-digit sacks from a guy like Young. And yet to not have him week one would be really dismaying, because you need to have that pressure on the QB. And you mentioned with Kyler Murray, a small guy that's really able to juke and move around, you got to get hands on him and get him to the ground, because, man, oh, man, we've seen running quarterbacks wreak havoc on this defense in the past.
You got to contain him, and you also get them hands up in the air. Tell me about Alante Taylor, the likelihood that he'll play.
Yeah, he was speaking in the locker room yesterday. Everything is positive with him. He said he's ahead of his recovery timeline from a groin issue. That's like a hamstring, too. It's like those soft tissue injuries can be so nagging. You don't want to push him and bring him back too early, and he ends up re-injuring that groin, and you're out. You know, you're missing him for more of the season. But it seems at least he is on track to suit up on Sunday. We'll get more from the today's practice report to see what's going on. But Alante didn't want to go out and say, you know, I'm going to be there, book it, you know, I'll be on the field. But the way he's carrying himself, how he's feeling right now, definitely seems positive for Sunday.
Who's likely to start at corner? Corners.
You're going to see Kool-Aid McKinstry is expected to step up big time in his, you know, second season with this Saints squad. And then I think you're looking at Isaac Yiadom as the other outside corner, Alante being in that star role, basically your nickel cornerback. And if he can't go, Alante Taylor, that groin issue, they don't want to push it for Sunday. I think you're going to see Ugo Amade out there in that spot.
He's played well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He's a veteran guy, knows his way around for sure. And, you know, a lot of folks are asking about the rookie in Quincy Riley. I think he'll see playing time, but I wouldn't be throwing him out there to the Wolves in week one.
Let's talk about the gold end zones. I know it's a minor thing, but for the old-timers out there that went to Tulane Stadium, you would walk up and down. I'm talking myself an old-timer, I guess. But you'd walk in the outside of Tulane Stadium, and it was just gray and dim and no color, no nothing. And then you'd walk through that portal, and that field would explode in color. And I hope I'm doing it justice. So people that remember that know what I'm talking about. We're going to paint the end zones gold. We got gold jerseys, right, and black helmets.
Right, gold jerseys, black helmets, a whole new look going
gold
into
week pants,
one.
Or what are we wearing?
I'm not sure of the pants yet.
I hope it's gold pants. I don't like the white pants with the gold. But anyway, here's the point. The Saints, I think, have to keep the crowd in it, because it's week one. Everything's going to be a lot more important than if you're 0-4, whatever it is. And I think it's up to the Saints to give the crowd something to cheer for and keep them in it. And if they can, I like the Saints' chances. Thoughts?
Yeah, I'm with you, Tommy. For me, that number of the Arizona Cardinals being 6.5-point favorites on the road in a hostile territory like the Superdome, everybody raves about, you know, the home crowd, how the NFL fans here are one of the best. And I don't know that I'm not saying that Arizona shouldn't be favored in this one, but 6.5 just seems way too.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
High for me. I think this team's going to come out, you know, guns blazing with for week one and Kellen Moore's debut. Also, Spencer Rattler. We know the guy's 0-6 as a starting quarterback. Tough rookie season. Didn't have all the weapons around him. Didn't have a healthy O-line around him. Well, there's no excuses now in week one, and anxious to see what he can do now in this starting role. He spoke yesterday as well. He's still got that swag, that confidence about him, and hoping that, you know, with the full array of weapons around him, along with a healthy O-line, that this offense can do a lot better than what we saw in the preseason.
He's going to see some new looks from the Cardinals defense, but the Cardinals are going to see some new looks from the Saints defense, and the Cardinals defense are going to see some things they have not seen in preseason as well. Thank you, Steve Geller. We'll listen this afternoon, you and Mike Dettelier, live from the Treasure Chest Casino, getting the weekend kicked off. Have a great day. Thank you, sir. You bet. Steve Geller, 7:55, 5 till 8, traffic now, WWL. So, three of America's friends got together. Kim Jong-un, Vladimir Putin, Xi Jinping. Yeah, got together and had a meeting, and they were caught on an open mic where both Putin and Ping. Ping, by the way, was wearing his Communist Party workers' gray jacket, you know, his uniform.
Yep.
Got a net worth of $700 million, but you got to dress the part, I guess, just to keep it real. Both of them are 72. They were talking about lifespan, caught on an open mic, saying that maybe that when you're 70, you're a child, predicted by the end of the century, humans could potentially live up to 150 years and immortality and all that kind of stuff. I don't plan on going anywhere, do you?
I don't know. That's not my decision to make.
Yeah, I think I was plotting some numbers with my parents and aunts and uncles and so forth, and I think I'll live to be about 123 and a half.
I don't know. If I get to 70, 75, I'll be all right.
Yeah, age a little bit. Let me know how you feel about that.
We'll
tell me in 20 years, let me know how you feel about that 70 number. 8:11, we'll take a break. We come back. We'll talk about St. Tammany Parish. We'll start with Joe Impostato, a St. Parish Tammany Parish Council member, about some the recommendations that are coming forward about the council having more power or maybe not, and also about reducing size of the council. A lot of stuff going on in St. Tammany. I know a lot of our audience listens there. Stay tuned. We'll be back on WWL. I'm going to talk, too. I'm going to go in there, too. Why not? Everybody else is talking. I'm going to get in there, too. 8:15, Tommy Tucker, WWL. You got to have a little bit of fun, right? Thursday, September 14th. We're going to talk about what's going on in St. Tammany Parish Council with first Joe Impostato, then President of St. Tammany Parish, Mike Cooper. Joe Impostato joins us now, St. Tammany Parish Council member. How you doing, Joe?
I'm doing great. Good morning, Mr. Tucker. How you doing?
Tommy, please. I'm sorry we didn't have you turned up. You could have joined in the fracas.
I'm sorry, too.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about, first of all, I want to talk about the police jury form of government, which is I didn't realize that St. Tammany Parish, a lot has happened since 2000, right? So I didn't realize that this St. Tammany Parish didn't have a president until 2000, and it was a police jury-style system. Explain what that is, please.
Well, it's just a system that I think it's designed for more of a rural parish.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a lot of agencies that are supported by districts. The police juror more functions and runs their council district or their police jury district to serve the constituency.
It got nothing to do at all with criminal cases or trials or courts or anything else. They just call it that. So how is it different than, like, the city council running things or parish council?
Currently, we have a council president form of government, and you have where the power is more biased towards parish president.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have a separation of powers. You have a legislative branch, and you have an administrative branch that handles the major functions of parish government as far as your ditch digging, your public work services, your sewage, your water, a little bit of that we do have and run. And just in your engineering, your capital projects, you know, all the day-to-day operations of parish government.
So tell me about the Home Rule Charter Review Committee and how that came about. Is that a standing committee, or does it come up every now and then, or was it called into existence?
It comes up about every 10 years, and what you want to do is you put together a committee of both some council members, some administration. We also included the district attorney on ours,
mm-hmm.
and several stakeholders and community leaders or community people on the committee to go through the charter and to review it and see what aspects could be improved and could be modernized just to try to do a better job to serve the people of St. Tammany Parish.
So what did you guys come up with?
Well, we have several different changes. You know, we want to look at possibly balancing the power a little bit better so that council members can be a little more influential in parish government and can do a better job of serving their constituents. I'm trying to look at some other things. We're looking at the potential of changing the size of the council is another big thing. We are looking at, which I think is really important, having an office of inspector general to help us be more efficient with parish tax dollars and to oversee a lot of the agencies. Throughout the parish, but we're still working through that. This and Stephanie Peralta, our representative, sponsored some legislation, and she has to update it a little bit more so we can cast a bigger net over more agencies throughout the parish.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Please, go ahead.
No, there's several other little things that we're working on.
Like what else?
Another one of the things is the council would like to have the ability to, with a supermajority, which would be 10 votes, to remove directors that work for parish government. I think that's important. Hold on, I'm going through it. The council would also like to have the ability, which I think is a big one, Tommy, is to go into contracts their own. So if we have a contract related, we need a professional service specific to creating an ordinance. We would like to be able to go into that contract without having to go through the administration. And to me, that would make us a lot more efficient. Like, the administration works with us on those things, and we have a great working relationship, but we want to be faster and more efficient and just really be able to get more things done. Answer our constituents better.
Let me take a break. When we come back, we'll do a case study. Say, give me something that the parish would contract out.
Okay.
Give me one.
Oh, now?
Yeah, just one.
Engineering
anything.
Services?
Engineering. Okay, let's take engineering services.
The audits that we do through the council office, we're looking at a garbage study right now.
Or garbage, right. We'll do those too, all right? And we'll see when we come back, we'll go through a case study of what it looks like now and what it would look like then. We're talking to Joe Impostato, St. Tammany Parish Council member, about the Home Rule Charter Review Committee and some of their recommendations. Next half hour, we'll talk to President of St. Tammany Parish, Mike Cooper, about that. Again, it surprised me that St. Tammany had a police jury system of government before 2000, and a lot has happened, of course, obviously, since 2000. 820 Traffic Now, WWL. 825, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly back to Joe Impostato, St. Tammany Parish Council member, talking about some of the changes recommended by the 11-person Home Rule Charter Review, which includes Mike Cooper, Parish President, whom we'll talk to in the next half hour, some council members and other civic leaders. Joe, I presume you're on that Home Rule Charter Review Committee.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I'm a member of the committee.
All right, so let's talk about service. Let's say garbage services. Time for a garbage contract. What would it look like with the changes, and what does it look like now?
Well, the example was, so we initiated the request to do a garbage study because we want to go into a sole providership or several providership garbage service to eliminate redundancy, to save costs, and to eliminate destruction to our streets, you know, because we have so many different garbage providers. So currently, we have to channel that through the administration. Through the charter, what we'd like to do is be able to do it directly without having to go through the administration. I mean, that's one example. There's several other council members that have initiatives they'd like
to
do.
So what would that, and I'm not for it or against it, I live in Plaquemines Parish, so what would that accomplish by having it not go through the parish president?
It'd be faster.
Okay. Is that a problem now, or was this whole thing started by one? Wait, was it started by one specific contract or incident? I'm just curious about the genesis for all of this.
No, it's not necessarily a problem. It would be faster, you know. So if we want to serve our constituents and be more efficient and get things done at a faster pace, you know, I think this would enable us to do that. That's one example. There's several, but you know, you have 4 years to get things done. The way I look at it, you're not running for 12 years. I mean, it's a 4-year term. Things take a long time. For an example, this garbage initiative started, I think, March of 2004. We're still waiting on the study. Not a problem. It's not the fault of the administration. I think if the structure was a little bit different, it would have been
since March of when?
2024.
Oh, 24. Okay. I thought you said 2004. I was going to say that's a long time.
That'd be really slow. No, yeah. Not that slow.
And a lot of different presidents and everything else. So, okay, so I guess what I'm asking is it broken and you're trying to fix it, or is it working okay and you're just trying to improve it?
It's working okay and we're just trying to improve it.
Okay.
It would make it faster. The council members want to be able to do a better job to serve their constituency. And this is the kind of thing that would make us faster and more efficient.
So what would you say, Joe, in a couple of minutes we have left here, to those that say, well, all you're doing is bringing it back to a police jury style of government in St. Tammany Parish, and in essence, you're weakening the parish president?
No, not at all. I mean, currently we really kind of have a police jury 2.0. You know, I think this is modernizing it a little bit more. If you look at us trying to be more efficient, doing more consolidation, we need to do more of that. The council wants to be involved in more of that. They want to help government move faster. So this doesn't bring anything backwards at all.
Tell me about changing the size of the council. Would that involve redrawing districts? How would you do that?
If it's something that the council, so it goes from the committee to the parish council, and the council decides if it gets on a proposition to the public. If, in fact, it would happen and the people would support it, then yes, you'd have to redraw the districts. There's several different versions. I'm not advocating reducing it or keeping it the same. What I'm in favor of, coming up with a program and allowing the people to vote for it.
Politically,
I think that's fair.
Pragmatically speaking, that you would be asking people on a council to approve a measure that would, in essence, do away with some of their jobs, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's why I think it's important that the council doesn't exclusively make that decision. It's a decision that needs to be made by the electorate. They need to look at options and see, you know, there's pros and cons to both, right? A reduced council has pros, and the existing council size also has pros. So I think people need to look at, understand both options, and make a decision on what they think is best for St. Tammany Parish. And as a council member, we need to serve within that structure.
Thank you, Joe.
It's not a decision that the council should make.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate your time. We'll talk to Mike Cooper, get his side of it when we come back. High school football fans, get ready. Week 1, Friday Night Lights, the most comprehensive high school football show in America, the Manning Family Children's Prep Football Roundup in E&O's and Coach Lou Valden, with whom I went to high school. Tomorrow, every Friday night at 7, they'll have prep reporters stationed at key games in the metro area, and it really does put those Friday Night Lights on the radio. It's the Manning Family Children's Prep Football Roundup, presented by Acadian Companies and Dr. Pepper, tomorrow, every Friday night, 7 and 10:30, only on WWL and the free Odyssey app. Right now, time for WWL First News. 8:55, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Apologies to Coop, Mike Cooper, president of St. Tammany Parish. A little technical glitch there. We weren't able to get him on, but we can now. How you doing, Coop?
Good morning, Tommy. Glad to be on.
I don't know if you're listening or not, if you heard what Joe Impostato had to say about the Home Rule Charter Review Committee, your thoughts on it?
I did not listen. I was at an earlier ribbon cutting.
Did you have the big giant scissors?
Yes, we did.
Where do you get those?
North Shore Food Bank is adding another box truck to serve the east side of the parish.
Awesome.
To serve Slidell.
Awesome. Tell me about your thoughts with the Home Rule Charter Review.
Certainly. Tommy, thank you. Joe and I both sit on the same committee. He serves as council chairman now, of course, leading a 14-member parish council. And I think when the committee was formed by the council, what the public was calling for was particularly to look at the size of the council. It's a 14-member council now, and questions have come up. Sessions have been held to discuss, is the council too large? Is it, could it have at-large members or smaller single-member districts, smaller number? And that's one of the big concerns that has been discussed. I don't believe a recommendation has not come out yet regarding the size of the council and what it will recommend to the parish council to put on the ballot. I think there are some 20 recommendations that are being considered now to be sent to the parish council to consider putting on the a ballot sometime soon. But I think we should limit the number of important matters on the ballot that will give the public an opportunity to vote on what's important to the parish, not to the legislative branch, not to the administrative branch or the executive branch, but what's best for the parish public. And I think they're looking for to vote on the size of the council and to keep the executive powers with the parish president and the legislative powers and authority with the parish council.
So overall, there are some things in there that you support and some things you don't?
Well, some of the changes are over and above addressing the legal department and the size of parish government council. There are other things that are giving the parish council, if approved, more authority to fire directors after they're confirmed by a parish president appointment, to have to approve appointments by the parish president on boards and commissions, and just have more supervision over parish employees. And that is not how the charter was written. That's not how state government is run. That's not how
it seems like on the surface of it, Mike, what you just described is one guy having two bosses. Yes?
Well, that's exactly right. Okay. That's exactly right. And actually, 15 bosses.
15
you
bosses.
Have a parish president and 14 parish councilmen.
Okay.
And look, I'm on the committee. We look forward to putting out recommendations that the public will engage. That's what's going to determine the validity of this advisory committee that's been meeting since January. We want the public to be able to determine what are the pressing issues so that we can continue working on what our big challenges are here in St. Tammany Parish.
Mike, we only have 20 seconds. Joe Impastato said there really wasn't a problem with contracts, that he just thought this would make things work better. Is that specifically a solution looking for a problem?
No, he had half of that right. There is no problem at this time. It would actually take longer if they had to approve every contract was out. They approved the budget. They approved land use and zoning. I don't want legislative powers. I don't think the parish president should have legislative powers. I don't think the parish council should have executive and administrative authority.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. Sorry about a little technical glitch. We're going to take a break and back talk to Jeff Asher. Crunch the numbers on crime in New Orleans and see if it really is that much of a problem. We'll be back, WWL. All right, so we're going to talk to Jeff Asher now, and I'm excited about this, consultant and co-founder of AH Analytics. How you doing, Jeff?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm all right. I look, and I'm not trying to make fun of anybody at all, but seriously, when it comes to math, I am, dyslexic, I guess, because I don't get numbers. It's hard for me to understand what you're going to talk about, but we'll get through it, okay? So tell me when it comes to... No, I'm serious. I'm just being honest about that going into it. Words, I can do words, but numbers, not so much. When it comes to crime in New Orleans, how do you even go about establishing a metric when you talk about crime being bad?
Well, I think that we can all agree that crime in general is bad, and we want it to improve. I think that you kind of have to see it through two lenses, and people tend to only want to look at one lens or the other. The first is the level. So New Orleans is probably going to have 100 murders this year for the 56th straight year. We're probably going to be in the top five murder rate for the 30-something straight year.
Wait, slow up a little bit, Jeff. Level, say that again, please.
We're going to be in the top five in murder rate for cities of 250,000 or more, probably for the every year since 1987,
I believe.
And
that would be per capita?
Per capita,
gotcha.
Right.
Okay.
So that's bad. What's good, though, is the trend. And so we have seen an enormous drop in murders. At this point in 2022, when murder was at its worst, New Orleans had the highest murder rate of any city in the country. There had been 193 murders on September 3rd. Now we're looking at 75. So we had an enormous increase in murders in 2022, really 2020 through 2022. Mm-hmm. And for the last 3 years, we've seen this dramatic, really remarkable drop to the point that through August, we've had the fewest murders of any year since 1970. So that level is not good. It's still a problem. It still needs a solution or a set of solutions. But the trend has been very encouraging and suggests that we're probably doing something right. We need to learn what those things are and take advantage of this opportunity of the trend going down to continue that, to hopefully get to murder zero.
So how do you go about establishing what it is that we're doing right?
That's the billion-dollar question, isn't it? Nobody really knows for sure, and people don't really know exactly why murder fell in the 90s. It fell for a bunch of reasons. Some of them we have better ideas about than others. I think that you look at sort of the factors that are driving murder, both New Orleans nationally. So one, this is a national trend. Murder's down about 20% nationally in a sample of cities, about 550 cities that I collect data on through mid-year. So New Orleans down around the exact same, around that 20% range through August, seeing a very similar trend. So it's not just something that's in the water in New Orleans. It's something that's happening everywhere. It's happening in spite of the fact that right now we have fewer sworn police officers than we had 3 years ago. Enormous drop in murder, 60-something percent drop in murder, still have fewer officers. So it's not like the 90s where you could point to Richard Pennington coming in, firing half of NOPD in 1994, and then replacing them in 2 years, and all of a sudden we had this new police force that was doing all sorts of new things. We don't really have that necessarily in terms of the number of officers. We haven't really fixed the sort of root causes of crime. A lot of times, especially with activists, we'll talk about, oh, we need to fix poverty. We need to fix education first before we can fix these crime trends. Mm-hmm. We haven't done that. These are still major issues that are in need of fixes, and yet we're seeing these declines. The country is still awash in guns. We're seeing less gun sales now than we did maybe 5 years ago at this point, but we're still seeing lots and lots of guns within the country. So this isn't like a gun control driven drop or something like that. And it started 3 years ago. So it's not anything that started last year. It's not anything that's starting this year. So when I think about the things that are really the drivers, one, we've up to this point seen really strong federal investments locally and state investments as well. Enormous increase, and I know it doesn't feel like it, but had an enormous increase in street construction and enormous increases in things like neighborhood and social center construction coming from local and state governments. We've seen large investments up until this point from DOJ in things like community violence programs. And New Orleans is a great example. The Department of Justice in 2023 gave the city $2 million to start a hospital-based violence interrupters program. So anybody that's shot, they go to the hospital, they say, they try to attempt to stop that shooting turning into a retribution shooting, work with the family, work with the victims, work with the friends to avoid something bad happening down the line. That was so successful. Go ahead.
No, that's all right. I'm listening.
That was so successful that the city invested $5 million of its own money in advancing this program so that it would be citywide. So you've got that. You've got the DA's office running its place-based intervention program called No Dice. Obviously, we've had Troop NOLA here. I tend to think it's reasonably on the smaller side, but you want to say anything that's done anything to help the community has probably had some sort of effect. And if we can't tease out anything, we should throw that in the pot as another thing that's being done. So it's not that we have one thing that's going well here, but we have all of these new initiatives and new efforts that are being spurred by the fact that we've generally, up to this point at least, had healthy budgets and the ability to invest local and state dollars into trying new things.
So to be clear, while you started by saying social answers about education and poverty, while that's not changed, non-law enforcement or efforts have changed or intervention efforts have changed. Do I understand you correctly there, Jeff, as far as that?
Yeah, well, we've seen a lot of efforts, both from the law enforcement side and the non-law enforcement side, that aren't necessarily fixing education, but really targeting the sources of violence.
Proactive as opposed to reactive, right?
Yeah, and not requiring major structural changes, but rather saying we know that these you know, with the DA's office, we know that these locations are generating lots of complaints, are likely having drug trades and things that are leading to violence. Let's use the levers of the city to do something about it. So that's what we've done, I think, a lot more than we were doing 5-10 years ago, even.
So if you take out 14 victims of Bourbon Street, we're talking about 59 murder victims, right?
Yeah. If you remove January 1st, then you're talking about the fewest murders. I think it's only since 1968 or 69, but far lower than even 2019 when we had the fewest murders. That set a new modern low in 2019. So it's remarkable that we had 266 murders in 2022. And this year we're on pace to have 105 to 110. It's a remarkable turnaround.
And I don't want to, go too far into the weeds here, but are we using murder and homicide interchangeably here?
So in this case, I'm talking about murder. Not all murders, or not all homicides are murders, but all murders are homicides.
Right. So is there a subset in that murder of whether it's domestic violence or whether it's aggravated robbery or something along those lines? You see what I'm asking you, where if it's social violence or domestic violence, there's a little you can do to intervene there. I guess. I don't know if it's armed robbery. Tell me about that.
So usually it's argument related. So you and I are hanging out. We know each other. Usually the perpetrator and the victims know one another. Domestic violence is obviously very serious. We see a number of domestic murders each year, but usually that's a stable number, and it's about 10% of overall murders. Robberies rarely turn into murders, and we've seen a dramatic drop, like a 60% drop in robberies, an 82% drop in carjackings from 3 years ago. So we're seeing less and less of these, and those rarely turn into something horrible, like with Linda Fricke, with carjacking turn into a murder. Those are rare. Usually the victim and the perpetrator know one another. They have some sort of argument. They have some sort of disagreement. One or both of them are armed, and it turns into something violent and turns into a shooting, turns into a murder. So that is the majority of our killings tend to be like that. I don't want to stereotype everything, but sort of the general direction that they tend to go.
And I'm certainly not trying in any way to minimize the 14 people that lost their life in a French Quarter terror attack, but from a statistical standpoint, would it be accurate to call that an anomaly and really work off of a 59 number as far as projecting murders for the rest of the year?
Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen the rest of the year. I think that let me say pace.
Let's call it pace.
We're certainly at that level. We're on pace. I mean, with 4 months left, I think we've been averaging right around that 10 murders per month over the last few months. If you call January an anomaly, because there were only 19 murders in January, and so 14 of them happened within the first 3 hours of the month. So in general, I think you could call it an anomaly.
Statistical anomaly in no way taking anything away from anybody that lost their lives. Right. So I guess what I'm saying is, where would that put us per capita if you plan on, but if you say extrapolate, say 10 murders a month, that would put us at, 120 murders for the year?
Probably closer to 100.
And where would that put us per capita? Do you have any idea?
I don't know exactly where it would put us per capita, probably in the 30-ish per 100,000 range, which may drop us out of the top five. I don't know. I think the thing is,
this episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Because this is national, everywhere else has seen big declines too. Mm-hmm. I don't run those numbers specifically to know exactly where we would be. I'm a big believer in we should compare ourselves to ourselves rather than to others. Mm-hmm. When you think about like how are the Saints doing, you often think about it relative to okay, they won 13 games in 2000 under Drew Brees, and now they're going to win three games this year. That's a better comparison,
easy,
I think, to
Jeff.
Looking at, okay,
easy.
They're not the Eagles. If we're lucky, they might win three.
Easy, Jeff.
So,
pull the reins back on Jeff. Hang on a second here. We haven't even played a game yet. Hey, hang on a second. Seriously, I'm going to pick it up when we come back, all right? Okay. Good. Jeff Asher, consultant, co-founder of AH Analytics. We're talking about President Trump threatening to send the National Guard to New Orleans. We have already talked about murder, but I want to talk about crime in general, because I guess when I drive around New Orleans, or I live in Plaquemines, but when I drive or wherever I walk anywhere, I don't feel unsafe. But I guess, is perception reality, or is reality reality? Because Jeff deals with reality and numbers. That's what he does. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Text me at 504-260-187. Let me know what you think about crime in New Orleans. Do you think it's bad? Do you feel afraid when you come to the city? I'd like to know. But don't text and drive. Back in a flash, WWL. So we're talking to Jeff Asher, and we're discussing President Trump. Well, in a way, crime in New Orleans, and President Trump saying that he could straighten things out in 2 weeks. And I guess, Jeff, I don't know if perception is reality. Ronald Surpass will tell me that it's about the perception of crime. I'm not getting anybody telling me they're afraid in the city. You deal with the reality, not the perception, right? So I don't know. What is it? Is it the perception or is it the reality?
Well, it's certainly the perception. I think that New Orleans has crime, just like any city. Mm-hmm. It remains an issue that we need to deal with. I think the question is not, does this problem exist? It's what is the best way to approach it? And I don't think anybody locally, or very few people locally, would say the best way to approach it is to disrupt all of the progress we've made over the last few years and bring in the National Guard and federal agents to do who knows what. I think that in general, people are bad at perceiving crime trends and crime data. And you see this in surveys of going back the last 20-something years of people saying that they think crime has risen in America over the past year. And more than half the time in the last 20 years that these taken these surveys, it's fallen. YouGov just had a poll asking people whether or not murder was higher now than in the early 1990s, when, like, objectively, we have significantly lower murder now than we had in the early 1990s. And yet a majority of people in every age bracket, every political group, every every way that you could slice it said that murder was higher 35 years ago than it is now. So it's something that people are bad at perceiving. I don't think that we should make policy based on that perception. Mm-hmm. I think we should work to change the perception and say, when things are getting better, hey, they're getting better. This is why we think they're getting better. These are the things we still need to do. The problem is not solved, but they're getting better. And when they're getting worse, we should also have that conversation. And, you know, I've been on your show many times and we've talked about how much worse things were getting. It's delightful to be talking about how much better they're getting. We shouldn't be afraid when they're getting worse.
Jeff, let me jump in for a second, because I think you just nailed it when you said you don't base policy on perception. You base it on the reality, on what the numbers are showing. You can't create a policy based on a subjective feeling, right?
Right. And your policy response, if the perception is, you know, that people don't believe that crime is rising or crime is falling, your policy response should not be to feed into that. Your policy response should be to take advantage of that and to convince them of that what the data shows is happening. And it also shouldn't be to ignore that these are still issues, that these are things that every American city is dealing with. But one can acknowledge that the trend is positive while also acknowledging that, hey, it's not perfect and we still have a lot of work to do.
So I began this by saying, when it comes to numbers, I'm kind of dyslexic. I'm a word guy. But let's take a statement like crime is out of control. There's a lot to unpack there. That can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people, right? I mean, that's a very subjective statement. So when it comes to crime is out of control compared to what, politicians love, and this is not a reflection on Donald Trump at all, every politician loves to save people from danger, whether it's real or imagined, right? Donald Trump says he can clean up crime in 2 weeks. Is crime out of control in the city? And what difference could the National Guard make in 2 weeks in New Orleans, or where would they even focus their efforts? I'm not criticizing the president or the National Guard. I'm just trying to figure out, is this all just a big smokescreen, or what's going on here?
Well, I don't know that an out of control versus in control framing is at all helpful. I think that we are seeing vast improvements. We are, you know, if we have 100 murders this year, that's still 100 too many. Mm-hmm. So we still need,
but it's not realistic to say zero either, right?
No, it's not, but we can hope for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that should be the goal, even if we know that the goal is too lofty, or maybe not even the goal. That should be the dream. But in terms of, I think this is where, getting back to my original point way back when we started talking, was the level is something that is still something we have to deal with. This problem exists, but the trend, which is what the policy should be based on, how are we doing better or are we doing worse? The trend is unequivocally down. And it's very strange. I mean, I expected and we see this nationally, we're going to have probably the lowest murder rate nationally ever recorded in 2025. My expectation was entirely that the president would come in and he would basically take credit for it, because that's what politicians do, right? Regardless of whether or not your policies have influenced it, if the data shows good things, then you take credit for it. Instead, it seems bizarre to be really interrupting a lot of the stuff that drove things down or probably drove things down, and say, no, things are actually getting much worse and they're out of control. What the National Guard, these are not law enforcement officers. They don't have arresting power. They're in D.C. largely hanging out around the metro stations and the monuments and tourist areas. The French Quarter is already one of the most heavily policed areas in the state. It probably the most heavily policed area in the state. And so I don't know what adding armed National Guard necessarily does to improve the safety in the French Quarter. And I don't know, are you going to put them around the Garden District where in the walking tours? I don't know where you're going to put them.
Well, this is not in your
visible areas.
This is not in your wheelhouse, but I'd like to talk to Walt Leger, because I can't believe it does the city any good to have the president talking about crime being out of control in New Orleans and sending the National Guard in when it's not true, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't do us any good. It doesn't do anybody any good. I can't imagine the governor likes that, because the governor has been talking up his contributions, and you've had.
And that's
Trubula
the other thing.
Here.
Exactly, Jeff. That's what I thought. It's counterintuitive, because, well, wait, we were taking a bow for Trubula, but now you're saying you need the president's help. I don't get that.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, it doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense. I don't think it necessarily fits the data, and it's certainly not going to be popular. I mean, who wants troops? And
fits the data. Thank you, sir. Go ahead. Keep
and going. I was thinking back to 20 years ago when, you know, in 2 weeks from yesterday, when I went back with my dad to start to look at the house and clear things out. And I remember we were getting stuff and put them in the car to drive back to Houston. And these National Guardsmen straight from Iraq, from Massachusetts, drove by. And I was remember thinking how nice it was that they were there, that they were supportive, that they were helping to patrol the city, and they were keeping, you know, people's property
but
safe.
But you're talking about after Katrina now, right?
Right after Katrina, right. It was very different. It was very nice for the National Guard to be there. This is not necessarily a time that I think anybody needs or wants this. And if the data suggests that things are getting better, then all it can do is necessarily interrupt that progress. I mean,
Jeff, before we let you go, because I don't know how limited your time is, but we started with education and poverty and people pointing to those. And also we talked about hoping for zero. But when it comes to the trends and the downward trends, could it be that some of the low-hanging fruit has been harvested? And if you really want to get those numbers down a lot from there, almost like golf. I don't know if you play golf or not. You can get to shoot 90 pretty easy. But if you're going to go from 90 to 70, you better work a lot at it, and it's not easy. Is it kind of the same thing here where some of the low-hanging fruit has been harvested, and now if you're going to get those numbers down a lot, you really need to look at the root causes with education and poverty, or am I making stuff up in my head?
First off, I take exception to you just assuming I'm not a scratch golfer.
All right. Well, I didn't say that. I said if you play golf. I said, I don't know if you play golf. And then I said, if you do.
Definitely not a scratch golfer.
All right. It's easy to go to 90. Am I right?
But then to go from
90 to 70, you got to work a lot at it.
Absolutely. And I don't know. I think that there's some truth to that. And you see that in certain areas like response times. And OPD in April 2023 had a 180-minute average response time. So 3 hours was the average response to all 911 calls. Now, because they've added civilians, they have this contractor responding to non-injury traffic accidents. This year, it's closer to 50 minutes on average. So we've seen dramatic drop in response times because we took care of, like you said, kind of the low-hanging fruit. To get to 40 minutes or 30 minutes on average, that's a lot harder. Because we don't really understand exactly what's driving crime down, I don't know that we can predict whether or not this is going to get better, get worse, or stay about the same. My prior is that we're probably going to see it sort of level off, and it generally tends to rise at some point. At some point, this drop is going to stop. I don't know if that's 6 months from now or 6 years from now, but because we don't really know exactly why this is occurring, we can't say with 100% certainty that we're not doing something right that's going to keep it going down. So I don't know that it's necessarily low-hanging fruit. In theory, as you reduce shootings, you reduce these retribution killings. You reduce these cycles of violence.
It's an exponential effect almost, right?
Yeah, in theory, that helps to reduce it. But we still got, you know, obviously New Orleans has a lot of alcohol, it has a lot of drugs, it has a lot of guns. Those things, when they're mixed, occasionally lead to violence. So we're probably always going to have a certain level of violence. There's always going to be things that we can do to improve upon or reduce our level of violence. But we're probably going to run out at some point of the ability to go down significantly further, whether that's 30 murders or 70 murders or 100 murders, I have no idea, and I don't think anybody else knows as well.
Let me get to a quick text here. And look, everybody's entitled to their opinion, right? But 1401 text in last four digits. It's a crime deterrent. What is wrong with you liberal idiots? Do y'all want crime? It sure sounds like it. Well, first of all, I can assure whoever texted this in, Jeff Asher is no idiot. I may be, but I can guarantee that Jeff is not. Secondly, I knew you weren't a scratch golfer because you work too hard. You would have to be spending a lot more time on a golf course and neglecting your duties to be a scratch golfer. Thirdly, do you want crime, Jeff? Are you a liberal idiot?
I don't know. I don't want to see myself in any sort of stereotype there.
Yeah.
I like to think that I'm, my role at least is sort of as the umpire, calling balls and strikes, and I wasn't being called a liberal idiot in 2020 and 2021 when I was the first one to write about how much murder and gun violence was rising. Mm-hmm. So it's been weird the last few years to see sort of the side switch as far as who's yelling at the umpire. I used to be a good golfer in high school. City Park had a, when after school you could pay $10 for a month and play nine holes for
same
for
thing at Brechtel, buddy. Kept me out of trouble. I guarantee it kept me out of trouble.
That was the best.
The monthly ticket. Yep. So real quick, somebody texted in. What happened in D.C. after the guard game that came? That's a good question. What did happen in D.C.?
So it hasn't been very long. It's been what, less than a full month. Mm-hmm. What we see from the available data, which is incomplete and preliminary, is that there hasn't really been a lot of change in violent crime. Violent crime was falling in D.C. It's falling now. It, at least from the publicly available data, we're not really seeing, if you chart it, any real change. Mm-hmm. But you need a couple of months to be able to see anything. We do see potentially a drop in property crime, which could really, I mean, it sounds like, oh, great, property crime's down, but it also is an alarm bell if people aren't wanting to be around areas where the National Guard is. If it turns people off, if tourists don't want to come, you would see a drop in property crime. I mean, COVID was great for reducing pickpockets in the French Quarter. It had horrible effects everywhere else.
Well, it emptied the pockets, right?
Yeah, well, and there weren't tourists. Yeah. So you don't want to reduce property crime, which is really often, almost always driven by opportunity, by reducing the opportunity. You want to reduce it by reducing that sort of ability of criminals to commit crimes. So it's too early to say for sure. There does seem to be at least a small drop in property crime. Whether or not that's just random noise or actually related to what's happening in D.C., and whether or not it's because people feel safer and there's less crime, or because there's just fewer people out there to go about and do vehicle burglaries against or pickpocket, we don't know for sure, and we won't be able to say that for a while.
Real quick, I got to get to this text, and it's a little bit nicer than the other one. Crime is down because of the weed wars ended after 40 years. Is there anything truthful about that at all, factual about that?
I don't know that we can necessarily tease that specific effect out. We in New Orleans, it's been a decade plus since mm-hmm. the city sort of decriminalized marijuana prosecution. So I don't know the degree to which that specifically is driving it down over the last 3 years.
Jeff, any final points before we let you go? I appreciate your time. I really do.
No, I don't think so. We're seeing very positive trends, and I guess from my perspective at least, I would hate to interrupt those positive trends just to score political points.
What's the strongest part of your golf game?
It's definitely not my putting. It's probably mm-hmm. I'm good with a 5-wood. That's like my the tin cup 7-iron is my 5-wood.
My problem is I'm a driving range golfer. I can strike the ball well. I just can't score. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
You bet. Jeff Asher, the consultant, co-founder of AH Analytics, trying to put some fact behind the story. 941, 19 till 10. Traffic now, WWO. All right, 950, 10 till 10. Quickly to... Is he there, Tim? Okay.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
I'm sorry. How you doing? Doctor, go ahead and introduce yourself. I'm sorry.
Hi, Tommy. Thanks for having us on. I'm Dr. Tim Peterson, Medical Director for the Blood Center.
Yeah. Tell me, you know, after Labor Day, there is a traditional blood shortage, is there not?
It's always difficult coming off the summertime, Tommy. You know, everyone's getting back into school finally and are returning from vacation, so it's a little difficult. But we really appreciate the help that WWL gives us in getting the word out of the continuing need for blood and blood donations.
Tell me how critical the need is now.
Well, it's always critical, but as we're coming off a holiday weekend, you know, there's always increased traveling on the road and increased incidence of trauma due to accidents and such as that. And so the blood use is extensive at every holiday. And so we have to, you know, always increase our inventory after a holiday season, because we know that the need is always there. The patients who are undergoing surgeries or chemotherapy or other treatments are always in need, and every day is a crisis for them. So it's the donors who come out and who support the patients of the region regularly that provide the blood that's always needed.
You know, I thought about you the other day, because this movie, with Jim Carrey on, where Morgan Freeman is God. I forgot the name of it, but they talk about the blood being stored in a warehouse somewhere and all of that stuff. That's a key element in that film. Just talk about how the need is very real, and on a day-to-day basis, what a difference one donation can make, please.
Yes, sir. Well, in our area, we supply about 35 hospitals and dozens of same-day surgery locations, long-term care facilities. All of them ask for blood and blood components each day. And to maintain an adequate inventory, that's aside from emergency situations, we have to collect about 300 to 350 pints every single day, all year long, just to maintain the basic needs.
Do you even come close to that, doctor? That seems formidable.
It can be difficult, especially during the summertime when our schools are out, and of course through holidays with extended vacation periods. About 25% of our donation come from our younger donors, which is wonderful. But of course, when they're not in school or colleges are out, high schools are out, we're unable to do mobile blood drives there. And of course, it's difficult for a lot of people to get to our donor centers when it's time away from school or work.
So tell me some of the more common things, because I know I'm going to direct everybody to thebloodcenter.org to go through and click on what would prevent you, what medicines you're taking that would prevent you from donating. Give me some of the bigger ones, or tell me maybe the better way quickly who would be eligible to donate.
Sure. Pretty much anyone who is 17 years or older can donate on their own as long as they're in good health or healthy. Very few medications would keep someone from donating. I'd say probably the most common that would be medications such as Propecia for hair replacement or Proscar, which is the same medication that is used for prostate enlargement. Those drugs, if they get into a blood component and were to be transfused to a pregnant woman, could potentially cause deformities in the developing fetus. So, but other than that, there really aren't many medications that would defer someone. And most common medical conditions, high blood pressure, diabetes, as long as they're well controlled and are doing well, the medications would not prevent someone from being a blood donor.
So many people on weight loss drugs, as am I. What about hormone replacement therapy?
Hormone replacement therapy is not a problem. The weight loss drugs, such as the GLP formulations, or Ozempic or Wegovy, all of those are perfectly acceptable, as are many of the immunosuppressive meds that are taken for psoriasis or eczema or for psoriatic arthritis. All of those are also okay to be a donor.
Talk about tattoos, please, if you would.
Sure. With tattoos, if the tattoo is applied at a state licensed facility, then the person can donate right after they get a tattoo. Now, most people wouldn't, because it's going to be rather sore.
Right.
But if it's self-applied or applied in a state or location that is not inspected and licensed, they would be not eligible for 3 months.
Go to thebloodcenter.org. Where can you donate, doctor? They places all over the place, East, West Bank, everywhere else?
Yes, sir. We have about 12 or more donor centers, plus we have anywhere from 5 to 10 mobile drives. All of them can be found at thebloodcenter.org or 1-800-86-BLOOD.
And you can always vet yourself, right, through the website?
Absolutely. You can, in fact, go online, do the donor questionnaire the day of donation, and that'll save you a lot of time by filling out your questionnaire before you arrive at the blood center.
Thank you, doctor. Good luck to you. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much, and thanks, WWL, for always supporting us.
You bet. Dr. Tim Peterson, Medical Director for the Blood Center. If you're healthy and can donate, do it. We'll take a break, come back, find out what Newell's got for us today on WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Quality sleep isn't just about how long, but how well you sleep. And science proves temperature plays a massive role. ChiliPad by SleepMe is a precision temperature-controlled sleep system that cools or warms your bed so you can sleep hard and recover harder. And it's not just for pro athletes. Just set your temp from 55 to 115 degrees, and ChiliPad does the rest. Visit sleep.me and use code SLEEPCOOL20 for 20% off your first ChiliPad. That's SLEEP.ME for 20% off your ChiliPad. This special offer expires September 30th and cannot be combined with other offers.